On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon, Namibia. It's Friday, the 25th of April, 2025. And just like that, the weekend is almost here. Now, we hope your week was productive and positive. And now it's time to start winding down and looking ahead to some well-deserved rest and recharging. Now, whether you're clocking out early, wrapping up projects, or simply counting down the final hours of the workday, Friday energy is in the air across the country. Offices are easing into a shower rhythm, schools are closing for the week, and plans for the weekend are beginning to take shape. Now, for the parents, we know the lunch boxes are almost packed away, uniforms ready to be tossed into the wash, and we salute you for making it through another busy week of school runs and routines. Now, to all the professionals out there, you've done your part. Now, don't forget to breathe, pause, and enjoy your time off, whether it's a chilled evening at home, a hike with friends, or a road trip to explore Namibia's natural beauty. Make space for joy this weekend. And speaking of our beautiful country, let's not forget today is another day of celebrating all that has been happening through the week. Now, let's each take a moment to give back to that and also prepare for the weekend ahead. And as always, On the Radar is right here with you, your trusted companion for real-time stories, thoughtful insights, and everything in between. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and we've got you covered with the latest from across Namibia and beyond, from social shifts to economic moves, community voices to continental headlines. We're live every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430 right here on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. And do remember, it isn't just a show, it's a conversation. So if you've got something on your mind, call on 083-288-401. Remember, would love to hear from you. So you're invited to partake in the conversation as well. And now, with that being said, let's dive right into today's news bulletin. President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, in her maiden State of the Nation address, pledged to lead Namibia with unity, integrity, and accountability. She highlighted 7 priority areas: agriculture, sports, youth empowerment, quality education, creative industries, health and welfare, and housing and sanitation. This will be supported by 8 economic enablers, including mining, energy, oil and gas, tourism, water, and transport. A key announcement was that from 2026, tertiary education at public institutions will be fully subsidized by the government. No registration or tuition fees, with students covering only accommodation and related costs. She emphasized education as a shared responsibility and urged youth to take advantage of this opportunity to contribute to national development. Let's now engage Simon Amunime, who is a youth leader and activist, on what this free education means and where it leaves NSFAF. Good afternoon, Simon Amunime, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon. Greetings to the listeners. Thank you for having me.
Simon, do you welcome the decision by the president of Namibia, Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, announcement that fees must fall on free education at public universities come 2026?
Yes, no, I am actually very excited and rejoicing from the pronouncement that was made by the head of state, Her Excellency Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, in relation to declaring that come 2026, the higher education will be free at public institutions, which I think it's a very, very, very good a decision made by the president.
What do you think about the quality of education this will have for populations in Kavango regions?
Yeah, I think perhaps to give the context first, when we speak about quality education, is that it's just the changing of modalities and perhaps concept. Because Happy, if you know very well, is that the government has established an entity that used to be called NASFAF.
Yes.
That is there to pay for students' tuition and non-tuition fee. And if you can look even at the 2024 financial year, government allocated around 2 billion to NASFAF.
Mm-hmm.
They allocated around 1 billion to UNAM, which is a public university, as well as 500 million to NAS.
Yeah.
So that is a lot of money. Government spend almost around 4 billion every year in higher education. Mm. It's just that the current modus operandi is that we have put so many middle people in the way.
Mm.
So what the president is saying is that, why are you giving money to UNAM, which is to 1 billion?
Mm.
You are giving NAS 500 million and again giving NASA. Why can you not just say, let these students go and register at UNAM? Then UNAM gives us a database and say, we have 500 registered students. How much is this cost?
Mm.
No, they will pay for them 500 million. Then the government pays directly to UNAM.
Mm.
Why do you need NASA? That's why they are saying now they are integrating NASA back into the ministry. So the relationship remains between the public university as well as the ministry itself in which they fall under.
Mm-hmm.
It's already existing. Many of us went to university for free.
Yeah.
They even give you money that you call refund for your upkeep, for your laptop, for your rent and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're just changing the concept to make sure that they eliminate these bottlenecks that have been there that are causing problems. Because if you check NASA, later recontract name to distribute the, either Benwindu to distribute the money,
mm-hmm.
or in the past they used to have what you call NAMIC.
Yeah.
That are the one that distribute. So money must come directly from the ministry to UNAM, must come directly from the ministry to NAS.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they are saying. And I know the question that they are bringing is that, no, it's discriminatory against private university.
Mm.
Which is not true. There is a provision to say that they are going to develop a funding model in terms of the how to fund the private
mm-hmm.
institution as well as the private VTC.
Mm.
Even before the establishment of NASFAF, when Dr. the late Abraham Yambo was there, there was no NASFAF, but people were still funded in terms of university. You are at IUM, you get funded. You are at Transnet, you get funded. Now, which I was equating now, even giving an example how the health ministry operates.
Yeah.
If you take Ministry of Health, with public hospitals,
mm-hmm.
you have Sendra Hospital, Katutura Oshakati, Marintan and so forth. Those are under the ministry. There is no an entity established that gives money to the hospital. The money gets budgeted directly from the ministry and it's managed by the Ministry of Health. But yet again, they still private hospitals. We know Lady Puamba, we know Rhino Park, we know Mediclinic,
yes,
and
exactly.
so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So government employees are still subsidized by government, what you call subsidy, what is called medical aid.
Mm-hmm.
The same government that is public hospitals still make a provision for people that want to access
mm-hmm.
healthcare at private facilities. As much as the central hospital, if you work for Ministry of Finance or Agriculture or work for NAS, this is what is called medical aid that government make a contribution. You go there, government makes that payment. So there is no discrimination whatsoever
yeah.
in relation to the private facilities because the private sector is meeting the government halfway and is playing that complementary role in terms of assisting government.
Mm.
So I think that's the context that people should understand. It's not that when you say public, free education at public institution, then you are saying we are eliminating now which are university, IUM, transfer those people that are schooling, they will not get funding. It's not true.
Yeah.
There will be a modality, they will also be able to access education and the government is going to pay. It's just that government has no right to dictate that IUM make your courses for free.
Of course.
Yes.
Now, Monime, so long ago, the government spoke about its plans to integrate NSFAF within the government structure or within the ministry. Now, in terms of this, that it wasn't so clear, and of course, it did receive a bit of backlash and criticism. So now, would you say, as a ministry integrates NSFAF within its sector, is it not now going to be that through that channel to say there will probably not be NSFAF anymore, or what would you say?
No, NASFAF is going to exist, but it's going to exist as a department or directorate in the ministry.
Yeah.
it's not going to be a standalone entity like a Paris Petal on its own anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because once it's now it's existing with as an entity on its own, with its own board members, CEO, they make their own decision. They can even choose to disregard what the government is saying. If government says people, necessarily right now to say, no, our funders will not allow, will not fund students studying HR, for example.
Yeah.
So that's why the decision that was taken by cabinet during the late president's term, Adjudinko, was there was a commission, a report was given, and the decision was taken to say there's a resolution, NASFAF must go back into the ministry. Because it's just unnecessary cost. Executives are getting paid a lot of money, unaccountability of money that is budgeted, they are spending student money on buildings and so forth that is intended to fund students. So it's 2 billion that is going to NASFAF remains in the ministry. That 2 billion is going to be used by the ministry to pay for students' tuition fee and non-tuition fee, both at public and private institutions.
Yeah.
So NASFAF seeks to exist as a parastatal, and it's going to exist within the ministry as a department.
Mm-hmm.
That's the vision.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, won't this free education create an overproduction of educated people? Now, given that there's already many youth on the street who are unemployed.
Yeah, but when you speak about free education, of course there'll be modalities and requirements. You cannot just say, because it's free and you're only at grade 2, you're going to study engineering at NASA.
Yeah.
Because it's currently happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's free education, it's just that now it's funded by NASA. If you meet the requirements, you apply that, you meet the criteria to study at NASA. You meet the criteria to, then you get funded based on that. So it's going to be the same. You are going to be funded based on your admission by an institution of high learning. It's not that you're going to sit under a tree. Then people say free education is a degree. It does not work like that.
Yeah.
So there are going to be requirements. It's just like for normal schools, the basic education. Because the constitution says that there must be free primary education and secondary. You cannot just walk into any high school there and start attending class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You go through requirements, you get admitted by the school, then you sit there, then you get that service.
Absolutely.
So when we speak about free, we don't say now people can just flog any institution and start saying it's free, I'm going to sit in a class.
Mm-mm.
So you must apply, meet the requirements, you get funded upon admission stages of the institution of high learning.
Mm-hmm.
Then they can pay for you because you're an admission to study, meeting the requirements of that particular. But of course there will also be procedures in terms of how this program is going to be rolled out.
Mm-hmm.
Because you must understand there is undergraduate, there is postgraduate, there is master, there is PhD. But priority will always be people that are doing undergraduate. And looking at the priority field of study in terms of postgraduate and master and PhD, you have to put in an application. It's not just mahala walking in, then you start attending classes.
Exactly.
You must apply.
Yeah.
And you must meet requirements.
Mm-hmm. Now, Amonime, what does this say about Namibia's socio-economic status come in the next, perhaps, 6-5 years?
Yeah, I think for me, education constitutes the center for development in every state.
An
illiterate society can easily be misled. And once you have a population that is literate, that is educated, you have people that have expanded their understanding. They've broadened up their understanding, meaning they can seek for opportunities,
yeah.
They can create opportunities, they can bring innovation. But even in terms of civilization and decision making, it's people that understand life in general in terms of how you can survive, how you live your life, decisions that you are making, and you will try to tap into different markets and opportunities. And that's why education, they call it the greatest equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
So for us to empower really a young person, or to empower Namibians, the poor families that we have, is through educating people. Because once they get the education, they have the knowledge, they of course they have the energy, they have the technical skills, they can do something from themselves, or they can think about investment, they can really live a quality living standard. But education for me is the cornerstone. If we can get that one right and have a literate population, then we can eliminate most of the issues that we are facing as a country.
Mm-hmm. Simon Amonime, thank you so much for educating us and making time for us right here on the Radar News Bulletin.
No, thank you very much for having me. That's in closing, just to say that I think the president has a vision.
Mm-hmm.
she spoke that it's not business as usual.
Mm.
And looking at the decision and pronouncement, you can see that it is not just rhetoric or someone's in writing.
Mm-hmm.
The president is very serious about changing the socioeconomic status of our country. And I think as young people, mm-hmm. as patriotic Namibians, we must render our assistance and support to the president.
Mm.
Because things such as education require a multifaceted approach that we must really all make a contribution towards supporting her vision. Because she's giving policy direction,
yeah.
but if the implementers in our role as young people, be it in public service, in private sector, in offices, as professionals, we are not helping to support a vision, it's not going to come to realization. So
sure.
I think we must all play a role, whether we are from the media industry, whether we are from the academia like ourselves, or wherever, we must make a contribution in making sure, because this is not politics.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's free education is benefiting someone that is at your village,
mm-hmm.
or someone from your house. So, and this is what you call genuine and true empowerment. So my call is just to say, let the young people support and be there really to make sure that implementation of some of these policy decisions are taking place, and we monitor and also support the process.
Indeed.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Okay. So what about in terms of competition for private institutions, and how can they leverage themselves to ensure finance keeps coming in? Well, let's look at these questions alongside Dina Gwagases, who is the Corporate Communications Practitioner at the Namibia Competition Commission. Good afternoon, Ms. Dina Gwagases, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon, Hebe. Thanks for having us with you.
Indeed. Now, the president has announced that come 2026, tertiary education is going to be free for public institutions. Now, from the NACC, we want to explore the thin line of strengthening public institutions at the expense of private sectors. What would you say in terms of that?
In fact, when the initiatives that the government has taken with regard to tertiary institutions to offer free education, I think it should be an initiative that should be embraced by everyone that is operating in the educational sector. You see, private institutions need to make profit in order to operate. The government institutions are being funded, subsidized, if I may say that.
Yeah.
But the main aim of government with this initiative is to ensure that everyone has access to tertiary education, and we don't have a situation where our kids are finishing secondary school and thereafter they have nowhere to go because of the financial situations or social circumstances that they find themselves in.
Mm.
So I think it is a initiative that should be emulated by any other person that operates within the sector. It may not be fully implemented by other operators in the sector, because they need to make some form of profit from that in order to sustain themselves and operate. But with regard to, if we look at it from the competition enforcement point of view, I wouldn't really say that it has so much impact with regard to the space within the education system, because as you know, education is something that is being offered by any institution that is able to offer and that is accredited by our national qualifications authority.
Mm-hmm.
So the competition, we shouldn't view it as an issue of competition when we come to the social upliftment of our people. So I think this is a good initiative in with regard to the impact that it will have on competition. Maybe time will tell.
Yeah.
Because as we are looking at it now, we haven't really assessed to see what impact is it going to have. But this is a government initiative, and it is subsidized by government, just as it has done with the primary and secondary schools education, whereby it was stated that education will be free for any child
mm-hmm.
who has access to education. It is a right, in fact,
mm-hmm.
According to the UN Declaration, of which we as Namibians are also part of. So it is a right to have education. And I think government is just strengthening that aspect of the right of any child to have access to education. So maybe with time, as time goes by, we will hear from the sector itself what areas are they experiencing challenges with regard to competition issues that may be related to the funding that the government will supply. But I think it is a matter of choice for any parent or any child that is able to, whether they are going to take the public sector education or whether they are going to take the private sector education. So that in itself is a choice that people make.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then with time, as I say, it will tell whether there are competition concerns. But as far as we have seen thus far, after the initiative was announced recently, we haven't done an assessment. So the market itself will inform us as time goes by if there are competition concerns and how those can be addressed. And, of course, if such issues comes up, because this is a initiative that the government has taken on, it is just building on what was there before with the primary and secondary sectors. So if there are issues that arises from this, we are definitely going to have to sit with the relevant ministry, that would be the Ministry of Education, the Ministry of Higher Education. We are going to have to sit and see how we can collaborate and ensure that as much as we give free access to education, we also ensure that those operating within that sector also have a fair chance of sustaining themselves and maintaining themselves.
Indeed. Now, what are some of those suggestions, just hypothetically thinking, right now at this point where we are, you would say the private institutions should do to still continue to generate income for themselves and for their employees?
You know, I'm aware of some of the private institutions that actually offers scholarships and subsidies or grants in whichever manner they see it fit as far as their financial situation is concerned.
Yeah.
So if that aspect can just be strengthened and just be, you know, offered to a broader sector, then I think it will be a fair situation, because everybody aspires to also have good education. So also within the public sector, we need to ensure as parents and as the public at large that we also strengthen the public sector institutions so that they also are on par with the education system that is going to bring forth students that would become, you know, change makers within our society. So that would be a hypothetical situation that I would be alluding to, that the ones that are already offering scholarships or grants or funding for disadvantaged sectors that they identify will just broaden that also a little bit, and the others that haven't taken that aspect on also consider to do that, so that we level the ground for everyone to have access to good education.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Ms. Dina Gawagases, for making time for us right here on the Reading News Bulletin.
Thank you so much, Happy.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye. And as you know, we're just getting started, but for now, a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with yet more news.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build. Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Taking flights has never been easier. Paratus is introducing SkyFi internet packages with speeds that will have you reaching for your seatbelts. Starting from $500, excluding VAT, per month, with speeds reaching up to 10 megabits per second. There's even a prepaid option where you can top up your SkyFi internet for just $15 per gigabyte. No contracts, no fuss. Visit your nearest Paratus branch to find out more. Or go to paratus.africa/Namibia to sign up online. Always
Paratus. Welcome back. Now still on free tertiary education, come next year, we further caught up with head of Namibia Council for Higher Education, also known as NCHE Secretariat, Sylvia Demas, on her sentiments in this regard, also in terms of students and parents themselves. Let's take a listen. Good afternoon, Ms. Sylvia Demas, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon, Happy. Thank you for having me.
Now, the president has announced that come the 2026 academic year, tertiary education is going to be free for all public institutions. What is your take on this?
Okay. To us, as the National Council for Higher Education, as the institution or a government institution responsible for the coordination of a higher education system in the country.
Yeah.
We very much welcome, we welcome this because according to the higher education law, that is the Higher Education Act, Act number 26 of 2003, one of the mandates of the NCHE, that's National Council for Higher Education, is to promote student access to higher education institutions. So there has been, the cry of the students to enter higher education institution has been there for a long time. Of course, it involves many other things, admission and all that. But tuition fee has been a big obstacle for students to enter the higher education institution. So we very much welcome this. And we are happy to hear that the president has taken the plea of the student to her heart.
Now, at your capacity where you're standing now, can you say Namibia can afford free education at university level?
Well, I want to believe that the due diligence was made by the president and her cabinet. I do not want to doubt her decision. I do not want to doubt the decision that they have made. So I want to believe that for the president to come to the public and to the nation and announce this, there must have been very good work done and she must have trust in what she says. So we are just happy. We don't doubt anything. It is for us together in the nation, in the government and all role players to see how we can implement what is there. Of course, she did indicate in her message that this is a tripartite responsibility involving government, private sector, and the parents themselves. So, yes, we welcome the news and we will take it from there.
Yeah. Now, Ms. Sylvia, what would you say in terms of private institutions? I mean, the free education is for public, it's for public institutions, but what about the private institutions?
At this point, the message or the news that we had is what we had yesterday from the State of Nations address,
mm-hmm.
There are surely details behind this message. I would not want to speculate for now. I would want to wait so that we receive all the details, what is involved in this, so that we are very clear, because the government has always been funding students going to private institutions also.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that has been there ever since the beginning. It is perhaps how what the president said, how it is defined. Because it could mean that this is funding the institutions to accept the students and not directly giving the money to the students.
Mm-mm.
Because both the constitution and the higher education law, those documents state that anybody can offer higher education at their own cost. So we need to see the definition of what the president said, because if the money is given to the institutions, then surely that can only be applied to the public institutions, because that is what the law says at the moment. But in terms of students going to private institutions, we need to see the details of what is behind the message of the president. Then only we can understand what she means.
Mm.
Yeah.
And also, on your understanding as a National Council for Higher Education, what would you say in terms of exploring the thin line of strengthening public institutions, perhaps at the expense of private sectors?
The government has the responsibility for public institutions.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not new. It is not new to the higher education. It is government is responsible for all public institutions in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it cannot be argued that because this is being done for public institutions, it is to disadvantage the private sector, because this is applicable in all sectors of the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And now, in terms of socio-economic development, what does this entail? Of course, the news is new to us, but I know with the visions and the goals that you have had at NCHE, what do you think this entails for Namibia's economic and social status in future?
Well, in future, today, yesterday, today, and in future.
Yeah.
What it means is to say this country has a vision.
Mm.
And the vision of Namibia is for a country to become an industrial nation developed by its own human resources. And that's exactly what the government is doing.
Yeah.
To make sure that there is human resources in this country to develop it, to bring it to the level where our counterparts in the developed nations are.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the message that was clear, that is what was communicated by the president yesterday.
Okay. Now, Ms. Sylvia Demes, in terms of what the president announced, of course, it's something that has to come both ways. What message would you give to students, or whether it youth or adults, that intend to go back to school next year?
Okay. The message that is there is just to say the government has answered.
Mm.
The president has answered. The government has heard the plea of the students, or they would be higher education students,
mm-hmm.
and they have answered. It is now up to the students to pull up their socks, make sure that they study hard and get qualification to qualify them to enter the institutions, the higher education institutions. There's no more excuse.
Mm-hmm.
The ball is now in the court of the students.
Indeed. And to parents, I take it you are parents yourself. What does this mean? Yes. Especially for those who perhaps even find themselves having 3 children all going to tertiary education and were not, mm-hmm. and sacrifices had to be made as to who should go now and the other should hold the rope while the other one goes. What would you say to parents?
Yes, this is indeed also a welcome message to the parents, to my fellow parents. As the president said, it is a joint responsibility. And we, many parents and many relatives have always been playing this role. They have always been contributing to their students to pay tuition fees and so forth. So parents must continue. The burden is now lightened.
Mm-hmm.
Let us continue. Let us make sure that we build the nation together. And yes. As the president said, she had to pack other investments or other commitments, including the old age pension, so that we attend to the nation that is that needs to be educated to build our country. To the generation that needs to be educated to build our country. So let us welcome this responsibility with open hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Let us all contribute and make sure that our children have access to higher education institutions.
Indeed. Ms. Sylvia Demas, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Bulletin.
Okay, thank you.
And now we pause here and take a trip to the marketplace, but we invite you also to partake in the news bulletin. That is by dialing our studio number 083-288-401.
Mukungulele kwa tuko maikuto wa mina apiri kwa mavcha ziva. Muvele kisema app ato wakasi nchavu kamso, zakale liferide, mise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba lifera zari vuka kuya kwa lifasi la lifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba ep, muikutwe kulibusie mba santo ye mwietuna. Muikole sifera fama kepe, marizo hola mina. Hamuvone, imba encha ni encha farizwe ikopanya mifuta ya lifera matasa ep ilini kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyali njira mlimu. Zengwi, zefu mani hama sifera sesifa ep ya imba, ize tatama. Elsin, Ehangano, Oshiherero, Omaemuriro, Catholic, Smane Kakarunga, Africans, Nizengu Zengata. Muluri zeze kachenu, haiva mtavira kulisfera sa kireke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-2358-063, kapa mulumere imele kwa digital@omalaiti.com. Muzive ni kufuma na imba kachenu, mkona kuifumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's Friday, but you know, by now you know, even if it's Friday, that doesn't stop us from keeping you well informed on the latest social, economic, or community stories making headlines today. Now, with that being said, the Villager e-paper is out, covering the following headlines. Nandidaito prioritizes youth empowerment in State of the Nation address. Rhino Resources finds light at the Capricorn 1X. US dollar reserve global dominance shrinks. Elua special school to make agriculture a core skill. Malaria outbreak claims 16 lives in Kavango region. Women leaders call for accountability in Africa's repatriation journey. Want to stay ahead of the curve? Well, subscribe to the Eagle Media House WhatsApp channel and receive a tri-weekly dose of economic, social, and community news absolutely free of charge, delivered right at your mobile app. Now just send a message to 081-200-4144 so that you never miss an update. In other news, malaria cases are reported to be on the rise in both Kavango regions, with the figure currently standing at 16 malaria-related deaths, now 10 deaths from Kavango East Rundu, with 2,092 confirmed cases between January and mid-April alone. Meanwhile, Kavango West has reported 6 deaths between January and March this year, with 1,400 confirmed cases during the same period, as according to health records provided by the Rundu Intermediate Hospital. Now, despite those high figures, preventable measures such as indoor spraying and mosquito net distributions are yet to reach to all households in the two regions. Our reporter Anakleta Haikera caught up with Regional Health Director for Kavango East Region, Ida Mendai, on this matter. Let's listen.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I think Kavango East Region is among other regions which are going through this outbreak for malaria. From week 45, which is last year, 2024, we have observed an upsurge in our cases. This far as to week 16 of this year, we have reported close to 13,185 cases regionally, where we are seeing Andara to be hardly hit with 7,787, and also followed by Nyangana with 2,925, and Rundu with 2,461 malaria cases. It is a very difficult situation to manage because it has its own contributing factors to this upsurge of cases. Because we see a lot of also latent behaviors of our community to come to the hospital. And this has caused us to lose even lives. This far we are talking of 15 deaths.
Onkundala ombwanawa kani hauto. Owa pumbwa oshimaliwa meendelelo, ndele ouna osheendiso. Ouna anilonga ya pumbwa okufutwa, ashike mboka ina onjo zoe otaende kashona. Ngele onkaramuni otainyengana, otokesh oteiningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto oye, etopewa epresendo wa mirongo nenatano, dongushu yosheendiso shoe. Mure ashike, uwe mtetilo mirongo nenatano. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement ayombanga. Ohauto yoye ashike. Mona omula, oshimaliwa ethimbo weshi pumbwa.
Easy money.
Tudengera nena ko nora hamano imwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Ano ko nora hamano imwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Oshipulera ko otokesh.
And I will resume that conversation on regards to malaria cases on the rise in both Kavango regions.
We have went through these cases to review, and the most factor which is contributing is delay in seeking behavior of our communities coming to our health facilities. So it's really contributing to high death rate also. And then we are not just sitting idle, we are really trying to sensitize, hence the need for today's message to say, can we walk through the streets of our town and alert the governor to talk to our community to raise awareness of this situation which we find ourselves in. We did not just do it in our town, we did it also in our district. Andara is doing the same today, and Andara is doing the same, just to raise awareness and informing our communities that we are here to serve them. We are doing also active, we are doing focused investigation in the communities, trying to understand the demographics around the contributing factors to this malaria. And when we get these cases, we are treating them also in the communities. We are looking at the environment situation to see if the house was not sprayed, we go in and spray, and many, many other activities which we are doing. Though it's challenges, but we are trying to make sure that we control this situation, this outbreak. We have also alerted our facilities not to close at any point. We are open to make sure that no patient should be retained, not accessing health services. And our community health workers are our backbone in the community. We have also sensitized them to ensure that they are fully equipped with all the tools to test and treat malaria for those who are trained. So basically, this is what we are doing. So we are calling upon our stakeholders, really. It can be the private sector, the banks, and everyone else who can play a role in this outbreak. Currently, we don't have nets, and this is one of the prevention methods which we want to really distribute, but we don't have. So we are calling upon those other partners who are able to support us through our ministry to do so, that we have this fitted net so that we can also distribute to our communities, those who need, those who are vulnerable, and so on. And the other thing, though climate change is playing a major role, we are seeing also our communities sleeping in the areas where they are flowering, and that's where the mosquitoes breed in the mahangu and so on. So all these behaviors we need to sensitize our community, make sure that
they are protected when they are harvesting in those stores. Because when we look at our hotspots, it's those inland, those areas where people are plowing, people are harvesting, and they are sleeping in the open and so on. So we call upon our community really to play their role also to make sure that they are protected against malaria and accept our health teams when they are coming in the community. If you want to spray your house, please allow us to do that. If we are giving you messages, please adhere to it and comply, because it's the only way we can prevent. Also, lastly, I want to call upon the border communities, because we are also receiving cases from across the neighboring country. And these are some of the cases which are very coming late to us, and it's very difficult to manage them. So we also call them to make sure that they come on time, and also we are collaborating with our counterpart to ensure that what we do here can be also joint forces and to talk to the border communities. Some of the border communities are coming to school. The school here, they go back, so you can see the transmission. So we want to collaborate and ensure that we work together to fight this out.
I know you mentioned something about this.
And there you had it. For now, we pause here, and when we're back, we'll be bringing you what's happening latest on economic tradings.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we take you through what's making headlines in latest on trading economics. Now we start off with agricultural commodity, with the top commodity loser being cheese at negative 4.10%. Rice comes at minus 0.72%, and gains are being led by rubber at 1.30%, with palm oil at 1.24%, and cocoa at 1.24% as well. Now for the metal commodities, the top commodity losers are copper at minus 2%, platinum at minus 1.64%, and gold at minus 1.34%. Gains are led by iron ore at 0.70%. On energy commodities, today's energy commodities market is characterized by modest daily movements, with natural gas standing out as the front runner with a negative 0.80% decrease. With silver pulls back. Silver prices slipped to around $33.30 per ounce on Friday, pairing gains from earlier in the week as signs of easing in global trade tensions lifted the dollar. Now, pressuring greenback-dominated commodities, the dollar strengthened as U.S. Donald Trump claimed that trade talks with China are ongoing, with additional signs of out of progress in negotiations. Now, copper slips as dollar strengthens. Copper futures fell nearly 2% to below 4.880 per pound on Friday, giving back gains from earlier in the week as stronger US dollar dampened demand for dollar-dominated commodities. Now, with the trade optimism supported broader market sentiment, it weighed on copper prices by strengthening the dollar, making the metal more expensive for foreign buyers. Meanwhile, uncertainty persists amid speculations that copper could be included in future trade measures, adding volatility to the market. Now, the same uncertainty has contributed to recent price gains as traders positioned themselves for potential supply risks. European stocks are set to open higher on trade hopes. European equity markets were poised for a higher open on Friday, buoyed by signs of easing global trade tensions that lifted investor sentiments. China mulls tariff exemptions on U.S. goods and trade disputes. Now, China is reportedly considering exemptions on some U.S. goods from its steep 125% import tariffs, Bloomberg News said on Friday, as Beijing weighs the economic toll of the ongoing trade war. Items under review include medical equipment, industrial chemicals like ethane, and plane leases. Now, these possible moves would echo U.S. exemptions, such as excluding electronics from its own 145% tariffs on Chinese imports amid cost concerns. While the U.S. imports more than China, then vice versa, Beijing's potential carve-outs underscore its dependence on certain American goods. However, Bloomberg noted that discussions are ongoing and may not lead to action. The tariff dispute escalated earlier this month after President Donald Trump imposed new duties to shrink the U.S. trade gap. And that's what we had for you in terms of trading economics. So what's happening lately in terms of economics? Now, with that being said, you are also invited to partake in the news bulletin right here on the reader. That is on 083-288-401. As for now, we see you after the commercial break when we actually bring you news beyond the borders. Don't go anywhere. Stay right there.
Mukungulele kwa tuko maikuto wa mina apiri kwa mavchaziva. Muvele kisema ep atolo kasi nchavu kamso. Zakale riferile. Nise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba rifera zalivuka kuya kwa rifasi la rifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba ep. Mui kutwe kulimusie mba santo ye nguyetuna. Mui kole sfera fama kepe mariso hola mina. Amuvone, imba encha ni encha farizwe ikopanya mifuta ya rifera matasa ep ilini. Kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyali njira mlimu. Zengwi zefu mani hamasfera sesfa ep ya imba ize tatama. Elsin, ehangano, oshiherero, omaemuriro, Catholic, smane kakarunga, Africans ni zengwi zengata. Muluri zeze kachenu, haiva mtavira kulisfera sa kireke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-2358-063, kapa mlumere imele kwa digital@omalighty.com. Muzive ni kufumana imba kachenu, mkona kufumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Mukungulele kwa tuko maikuto wa mina apiri kwa mavchaziva. Muvele kisema ep atolo kasi nchavu kamso. Zakale riferile. Nise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba rifera zalivuka kuya kwa rifasi la rifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba ep. Mui kutwe kulimusie mba santo ye nguyetuna. Mui kole sfera fama kepe marizo hola mina. Amuvone, Imba encha ni encha farizwe ikopanya mifuta ya lifera matasa F ilini kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyali nzwira mlimu. Zengwi zefu mani hamasfera sesfa F ya imba kize tatama. Elsin ehangano oshiherero omaemuriro Catholic smane kakarunga Africans ni zengwi zengata. Mululi zeze kachenu, haiva mtavira kulisfera sa kireke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-2358-063, kapa mulumere imele kwa digital@omalighty.com. Muzive ni kufumana imba kachenu, mkona kufumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Ilonge kidira oshi tothi shop fundi saka kuna we ko ShopRite kondando onini no kuhupisa kamana gashi umpunda oteo yoko uri mwesere rimwe kombiriga tanona balino osenda o mirongo wino weikamwe porake naishewe okijintano dosuka untirigane o marathon hitatu no wei no osenda o mirongo wino wei adhike irikosu omugane gameinuvo ino parusa kuhupisa ukana kupwe na iwe oinji ko Big Low Price Carnival ko ShopRite akuke ina Mana, otovuro kusindana kamwe komu utemba wikujo masiregali no mirongo mbali. Landa ita tuiri mesi gazano, uvule o kusindana pamwe no ShopRite Big Low Price Carnival. Mesi gazano, talihuru, moga jeta tugayuni. Ompa wano mauso, ozo zina okuranduruwa.
Welcome back, and now we take you to news beyond the borders. We start off regionally, then we move over to continental news. Thereafter, we bring you international news. We start off in South Africa, where its platinum industry struggles amid global uncertainty.
Platinum miners came together in Johannesburg to take stock of the turbulence, continuing to haunt the industry. The world's largest platinum producer has slid into a massive decline as prices dipped and demand waned on the rise of new energy vehicles in China, Europe and the United States.
We've seen a huge increase in electric vehicles, which meant that the demand for PGMs would be that much lower. And we've seen an increase in battery metals such as copper, lithium, to name a few. And that meant that, you know, the outlook for PGMs was not as positive.
Platinum is used in the production of catalytic converters to curb harmful emissions in diesel or petrol vehicles. At its peak, the white metal fetched $2,000 an ounce, but now it's trading at less than half the price, a shift that has forced many mining companies to cut back on production and jobs.
We worked, you know, quite hard last year in resetting our cost base and how we then think through capital allocation and the discipline associated with that. And as a consequence of that, our assets are sustainably in the lower half of the cost curve and generating positive cash flow and margins for our stakeholders.
Geopolitical tensions driven mainly by the United States pushing for tariffs against many countries is also fueling uncertainty.
Indirectly, it's going to have a major impact because obviously those mining products that go either to the U.S. will be taxed, and those who go to China mainly and elsewhere will be indirectly taxed, right, because they end up in the manufacturing products that China and the rest of the world and Europe end up selling to the United States.
Despite the uncertainty, platinum producers remain positive that the tide will soon turn in their favor.
We have a positive outlook for PGMs, you know, internal combustion engines, hybrid vehicles. They're going to be around for a lot longer than what people were forecasting a few years ago.
platinum production is down significantly from a peak of 5.3 million tons in 2006 to around 3.9 million at the end of 2024. The continued slide is causing jitters globally, but miners are confident of finding new markets and uses for the metal in the green economy to ensure a bounce back in the sector. Najma Abdirizak, CGTN.
Meanwhile, Zambia's government plans to grow beef sector with the help of VAT officers.
The government envisions to grow the beef industry to make it a key contributor to the country's gross domestic product, GDP. This is why one of the key stakeholders in achieving this target, the Veterinary Association of Zambia, has held its 81st annual general meeting and scientific conference in Livingstone.
The president announced that there was need to harmonize the conditions of service, especially for our public veterinary professionals and paraprofessionals, to those of our colleagues in the medical profession. And a lot of conversations have gone on. The matter now is sitting with the secretary to the cabinet.
Presidential Delivery Unit, Delivery Specialist Hector Hamsankwa, and Director of Human Resources in the Ministry of Fisheries and Livestock, Frederick Mwila, says the government will grow the beef sector.
We need to ensure that our smallholder farmers who are keeping cattle look at this sector as a business, not just for prestige, because that is where the problem lies in.
The government has got aspirations, and the aspirations is to grow the animal population, cattle population, from the current 5.1 million to 7.4 million by 2027. So for the country to reach its intended aspiration, you are a critical, few as we may seem, very critical to actualizing the government aspiration.
Meanwhile, Veterinary Services Director Charles Maseka has urged the private sector to invest in pharmacies and labs in rural areas.
The country is bigger than Lusaka. So if these people will come and they set up lab, fine. It's okay, but what will happen to these services in Shangombo? What will happen to these services in Skongo?
The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations is one of the key funders of this annual general meeting.
FAO has now mobilized over $6.9 million out of a $60 million target under the Agriculture, Food, Security and Livestock Cluster.
The AGM and scientific conference being held under the theme Animal Health Takes a Team also aims to make a healthier and more resilient future of Zambia's livestock sector and its people. Mombeha Mobola, ZNBC News, Livingstone.
Kenyans call for inclusivity in decision-making.
The Institution of Engineers of Kenya has urged the government to involve engineers in decisions that directly affect their welfare and the future of the profession. Speaking during the IEK annual general meeting in Nairobi, the institution's president, Engineer Shama Kiteme, said many policies, including the recent move to restructure and defund some state corporations, impact engineers but are made without their input. He emphasized that engineers play a critical role in infrastructure and development and should therefore be part of policy discussions.
In January 2023, they have raised concern about the compensation for engineers being unfair comparative to other professionals, and the request was for consideration for the improvement of entry grade for engineers. The PSC did not grant that. The consideration for non-practicing allowance and risk allowance, the PSC did not approve that. And so members are exploring other ways of making sure they address this injustice in the recently released career progression guidelines by Public Service Commission. Engineers are also concerned about the issue of lack of opportunities, job opportunities for engineers when the country is so busy with infrastructure. And engineers are concerned that there should be a deliberate effort to make sure that infrastructure projects that are available, they are given to citizen companies and local companies so that engineers in Kenya can continue to have more opportunities.
And at this
meanwhile, in Uganda, new fraud reporting platform has been launched amid surge in cases.
According to the police crime report of 2024, fraud cases targeting both financial institutions and personal wallets through mobile money platforms rose by more than 100%. This has prompted financial institutions to join hands in protecting their customers and their institutions.
Number one, we could argue that people are now more willing to report some of these things. They've become aware and they're more willing to report. So where initially for us as victims, we feared to report because of the stigma, because it has become common ground, people are more willing to share information. So that's one way of looking at it. But the other way is that the cases have actually increased. Because we are seeing more emboldened thieves, you see, when they did it first and it succeeded with Pegasus, they figured, we can go. So they've done it with banks, they've done it with the telecoms, every year. So there is also increased fraud.
The issue of financial institutions working in silos allowed fraudsters to replicate the same tricks across the sector while getting a free pass, since the laws aren't punitive enough to deter them.
We realized that the way fraud was being done or conducted within the financial sector, different institutions were being hit the same way. Okay? And then what we discovered was no one was sharing information. So a bank would be subject to a fraud incident, but they keep quiet. If their staff are involved, they just fire them quietly. They keep quiet, maybe claim the money from insurance. If they don't get insurance, they move on, book a loss. Okay? But they were not telling others. So then those same fraudsters, knowing that the banks won't tell others, would go and do exactly the same thing in another financial institution.
Although both the DPP and CID have been on board to fight fraud, the two institutions lack the technical know-how. But under this scheme, financial institutions will train the staff of DPP to handle such fraud cases.
This is the paradigm shift that we need. From isolated efforts to a collaborative and strategic alliance to share information, build capacity, strengthen legal frameworks, and raise awareness. By the way, the banks, for your own safety, you should get out of your way and train us and the investigators at your cost. Yes, that is just how to do it. Because if you'll be sitting there with no technique to handle anything. But if you are very interested in knowing that this is a shared responsibility, that's the beginning point.
As the central fraud reporting portal goes up, financial institutions will have to balance between upholding the duty of care and secrecy, which they owe to their customers, or perform their civic duty as good citizens, of which the former text precedence, Joanne Salmon, NTV, Business.
Somalia steps up fight against children illnesses.
Somalia has rolled out two critical vaccines, the PCV and the rotavirus vaccine, as part of its national immunization program. These vaccines aim to protect children against pneumonia and diarrhea, two of the leading causes of child mortality. The government has also launched a nationwide measles catch-up campaign to combat another deadly illness affecting Somali children.
We are expecting to be launched or reached out almost all the children under 5 to be vaccinated across the country. And we hopefully play an important role, not only just preventing for two diseases, also will play a vital role, the continuation for essential back of health services, as well as also the integrating of the immunization program for these two vaccines.
The integrated immunization effort marks a significant milestone in reducing the burden of measles, pneumonia, and retrovirus-induced diarrhea, three of the biggest killer diseases among Somali children.
When we all come together, we all work together,
this actually make a big difference. And this is one of the evidence that with all the strong advocacy, the leadership by the ministry, and with all the other partners' support, we were able to make this possible and to achieve that together so that we can protect and prevent the children of Somalia for all those preventable diseases.
The World Health Organization says this move strengthens the foundation of Somalia's primary healthcare system and routine immunization efforts.
Primary healthcare entry point in most of the country was EPI, routine immunization. So we used to start by routine immunization. So I'm sure that wherever we improve the routine immunization or make accessible routine immunization, other basic essential health services will follow.
Banadir Hospital treats over 200,000 patients each year, majority of them women and children. But the ongoing budget cuts threatens the ability of this critical facility to keep its doors open. The hospital, like many across Somalia, is struggling to maintain services amid funding gaps, especially in the departments supporting vulnerable groups.
We are currently experiencing gaps at our malnutrition department, where we have laid off about 75% of our staff who are not paid but working voluntarily. We are also facing gaps at maternity as well as newborn section. So we are facing challenges at our key departments. We are hoping traditional donors like China will fill this funding gap.
Despite financial challenges, Somali health officials say the government is committed to achieving self-sufficiency by increasing health sector funding.
We are expecting that it is going to impact the health sector of Somalia, that it is really, which is really dependent on donor funding. As you know, recently, last African Union meeting, which was held in Addis Ababa, there was, a resolution led by His Excellency Paul Kagame, where he was asking most of the African countries to increase their health budget, reaching what they called the 15%, which is a budget that's required to increase health.
Officials believe these measures will help stabilize the health sector and ensure continued delivery of essential services to the population. Mohamed Kahiye, CGTN, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Kenya and China explore trade expansion ahead of the June Expo.
In Kenya, a section of exporters and traders have met with high-level officials and representatives from Chinese companies in a bid to explore opportunities to expand trade between the two countries. The meeting brought together traders in leading Kenyan commodities such as tea, coffee, and avocados. It came ahead of the fourth China-Africa Economic and Trade Expo to be held in Hunan, China in June. During the trade fair, participants intend to showcase their offerings to the Chinese market as they seek to diversify their products, expand their access to high-quality goods, technologies, and expertise, and contribute to Kenya's economic development. Trade between China and Africa reached $295 billion last year, and China remains Africa's largest trading partner.
For us, for sure, tariff remains one of the barriers to entry into our market because it makes our products expensive and it makes it uncompetitive, and we need to find ways in which we can be able to do that. And it becomes very important for us then to look at ways that, in which we can be able to leverage on that. Opportunities arise for us to do trade agreements, like free trade agreements, which I think I'm informed one of the things that the president was talking about when he was in China, to see how then we can be able to use that to leverage.
We know China is advanced in terms of technology. In Kenya, we are trying to shift to value addition for our product. So this will be a great opportunity for exporters from Kenya to experience those industries that China has and try to look for market for those particular products.
Meanwhile, Air India is talking to Beijing over planes snubbed by China.
Air India is reportedly in talks with US plane maker Boeing to acquire around 10 737 MAX jets that were sent back by Chinese airlines. That's according to two people familiar with the discussions. It comes after Chinese customers started rejecting Boeing planes amid a trade war with the US. Boeing CEO Kelly Ortberg said on Wednesday that due to the tariffs, many airlines in China had indicated they would not take delivery and that the company could redirect jets to other customers. The US and China, the world's two largest economies, have imposed duties exceeding 100% on each other. The two sources, who declined to be named as discussions are private, said Air India was seeking around 10 narrow-body planes from Boeing, and they would be used by its budget carrier Air India Express, which has a fleet of more than 100 aircraft. None of the companies involved immediately responded to a request for comment. But the move could be a boost to Air India's expansion plans, as the group's growth has been constrained by a lack of new aircraft. Last month, CEO Campbell Wilson said the airline was a victim of circumstance, referring to delivery delays plaguing Boeing and Airbus.
Meanwhile, at Shanghai's auto show, car makers lure drivers with innovations.
Car manufacturers are eager to stand out in China's constantly innovating auto market. Nowhere is this more obvious than at Shanghai's auto show, running this week, where new models on display feature immersive entertainment, fragrance control, in-car refrigerators, and even hot pot cooking equipment. China's car market, the world's largest and most electrified, is seeing a brutal price war. That's as a trade spat with the US and electric vehicle tariffs in Europe have pushed car makers' focus onto the domestic market. Here, gadgets are major selling points. Li Xiang, a marketing expert at Chinese EV maker NIO, said the pace of innovation was relentless.
Chinese customers are expecting a very high level of novelty and new technologies, and the speed of product enhancement is very, very fast in Chinese market because innovation is happening every day. So our product launch cadence is actually like two or three times faster than the legacy brands. It puts a very high pressure on manufacturers, but also thanks to that, we got the chance to develop a lot of new techs here.
Reuters reporter Casey Hall was at the show speaking to car makers and testing out the gadgets.
Some of the coolest innovations and pieces of tech we've seen at the Shanghai Auto Show this week include 4D digital cockpits, you know, where you can be watching a movie or playing a game when your car is parked, and the car will actually shake and move in response to what's happening on the screen. We've also seen some car makers really focusing on in-car fragrances.
Over 100 models and concept vehicles have been unveiled, with crowds flocking to see Chinese car maker XPeng's experimental flying car, a passenger-carrying drone. However, perhaps the most truly Chinese innovation for the local market is a feature of Roxmotor's $40,000 SUV. It aims to capitalize on a trend for outdoor activities with a tailgate kitchen extension that cooks hot pot, a go-to in Chinese cuisine. Chief Strategy Officer David Wu explained.
Since you know the Chinese stomach is not for cold, they like hot pot, hot food, hot drink. So there's nothing that's more relaxed than a cup of tea.
China grants some exemptions from U.S. tariffs.
Which leaders do you want to meet, sir?
Do you have meetings with other world leaders when you're in Rome?
Yes, I will.
Which leaders do you want to meet, sir? Well, I'd like to meet them all. That would be nice. I'd like to take care of all of them, but we have many of them there, and they all want to meet. They want to meet about trade. And we are making some great inroads and great deals. You might want to speak about that.
We look after security in the north, in the Arctic, a lot of confidence between our services.
Additionally, we talked about trade, and we will definitely, we get along very well on trade. We'll do something, but I think the Prime Minister knows that over the years, the United States has been very good to a lot of people, and it's time for us to benefit also. So we're going to have a good relationship on trade, and we discussed other things also.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. This is...
This year is 200 years since the first immigration. I discussed in detail the war in Ukraine and on trade. We have also emphasized that we can benefit, both of us, by trading. We can be complementary, and we can find good solutions. But first of all, I appreciate, Mr. President, the spirit and the tone of this conversation, which has been confirmation of a very strong partnership.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Have you spoken about the tariffs that you want to impose on Norway? Is there a chance that you can lower?
We spoke about trade, and we understand each other very well. I think we'll have no problem.
You think that we can get an agreement?
I think we'll have no problem whatsoever with Norway. Very successful, and I think he could speak for himself.
Based upon your conversations that you've had today with the Prime Minister, do you see that tariff rate coming down from what you proposed just a few weeks ago?
Well, they have a great fund of $2 trillion. It's a big fund. And they don't have any debt. So I think they'd probably be willing to pay us more than that, I hope.
Are the two of you in agreement?
Mr. President?
Yes.
Meanwhile, Texas hat maker supports Trump's tariffs and stocks up on materials.
Cowboy hat making company Master Hatters of Texas had a master plan well before President Donald Trump announced global tariffs. Jerry Cook is the owner of the Garland, Texas-based hat maker.
We felt like that Trump was going to win the election, and so what we did is that we started buying extra material from different places because none of our raw material comes from the United States. These bags on this first shelf up here, they all came from mainland China. So we felt like, well, if he puts this big tariff on all of these countries, we'll have raw material that we can work all the way to next October. And then that would put us in a position actually to be better than our competitors.
Cook sees Trump's tariffs as a long-term benefit and, in the meantime, ups production costs for his competition.
They're buying product made in Mexico or China or wherever it's made at, and it's totally made, and it's very inexpensive, and it's what we call a costume hat. It's not the quality of what we're going to make. So if their prices go up, our prices are going to stay the same. We're making a better quality and getting better service.
Master Hatters of Texas, which makes cowboy hats for several prominent retailers and custom shops, has over 50 employees and produces dozens of hats each day. Cook says he's aligned with Trump's America First agenda and sees tariffs as a solid negotiating tool for the president.
We have a hard time with other countries shipping into Canada or shipping into Mexico because we have tariffs that they put on our product that cost our ultimate consumer more in that country. If he negotiates a better deal for us, maybe that'll mean that we'll be able to sell more product in a foreign country.
This week, the Trump administration signaled it was open to reducing sweeping tariffs on China. The Wall Street Journal, citing a White House official, said the tariffs on China could come down from their current level of 145% to between 50% and 65%.
In other news, Trump writes Valdemar stop after Russia launches deadliest strike on Kyiv since the last summer.
President Trump showcasing his increasing frustration with the Russia-Ukraine war and with Vladimir Putin.
I didn't like last night. I wasn't happy with it. And we're in the midst of talking peace and missiles were fired.
The president speaking to reporters while hosting the Prime Minister of Norway, not long after posting this rare rebuke of Russia's president on his Truth Social platform, saying, quote, I'm not happy with Russian strikes on Kyiv. Not necessary and very bad timing. Vladimir, stop. President Trump was responding to this, Russia's deadliest strikes on the Ukrainian capital since last summer. The attack underscoring the administration's failure to secure a peace agreement between Moscow and Kyiv, as the president is on the brink of marking his first 100 days in office. Remember, he said he'd end the war in just 24 hours.
You don't know what pressure I'm putting on Russia. They're dealing. You have no idea what pressure I'm putting on Russia. We're putting a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure? We do know that President Trump has put a lot of pressure on Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, beginning with their famous shouting match in the Oval Office 2 months ago and continuing yesterday when the president accused Zelensky of prolonging the war by not agreeing to a U.S. peace proposal. So what pressure is the president putting on Putin? He says he's holding off for now on any new sanctions against Russia. And when asked if Putin has made any actual concessions, this was the president's response.
Stopping the war, stopping taking the whole country, pretty big concession.
Stopping taking the whole country is a pretty big concession. Let's go straight to CNN's Jeff Zeleny. He is live for us now at the White House. So, Jeff, you were in the Oval Office today, and you actually asked the president about that Truth Social post and Vladimir Putin. What did he say?
Well, Casey, it was pretty striking that the president actually called out Vladimir Putin by name in a Truth Social post this morning, you know, saying, Vladimir, stop. So we asked the president sort of what led to that more a personal level of appeal, if you will. And it was the overnight bombing. I mean, the president was pretty clear there when he answered our question. He did not like what he saw and asked, you know, if there'd be more sanctions or what the plans were. Will the administration walk away? What will they do? He said, you know, ask me in a week. So now we have a bit of a timeline here. I wouldn't call it a deadline, but I think a timeline for next steps. Look, there's no doubt this has been a very frustrating episode for this president, who clearly underestimated how difficult it would be to try and negotiate some type of a ceasefire. Now, he said he has no allegiance to either side. That's very much an open question, because that has been one of the underpinnings of all of this. So the deal that they're asking Ukraine to sign on to is seen very favorably toward Russia in many respects. Of course, Russia would not see it like that. But look, the bottom line to this, the president is very, I think, wise to the fact that some of his critics believe he's been played by Vladimir Putin. He, of course, would not say that or agree to that, but that is what it's beginning to look like here. So at the end of this all, what has this gotten? Has there been any progress at all? It certainly doesn't seem like it. But the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, was also in the Oval Office today, and he said, look, the only person trying to make peace is the president here. So that is going to be a stain on his legacy and an unachieved goal if he does not reach that. And of course, it is not looking like it's heading in the right direction, Casey.
Yeah. The question, though, about peace is at what cost? Sure. Jeff Zeleny, thank you very much for that report. Our panel joins us now. CNN political and national security analyst David Sanger's here. CNN senior political analyst Ron Brownstein is live in person from the West
flesh.
Coast.
Indeed.
It's great to have you for the first time.
And now we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Bulletin. Now do stay tuned for the Onkon Anadigi program, brought to you by David Shombe. Thereafter, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut kicks off at 16:30. Now from Indafa, happy usual, it is goodbye, and I wish you a wonderful weekend. Make sure you do drive safely for those of you that are driving, so that you can return back home safely. Now that being said, let's be safe out there and keep the kids safe as well. Goodbye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Mukungulele kwa tuko maikuto wa mina apiri kwa mavchaziva. Uvele kisema ep ato kasi nchavu kamso, zakale riferile, mise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba rifera zari vuka, kuya kwa rifasi la rifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba ep, mwikutwe kulibusie mba santo ye nguye tuna. Mwikole sifera fama kepe, marizo hola mina. amuvone. Imba enja, niencha farizwe, ikopanya mifuta ya lifera matasa app ilini, kukopanya naha, nikuhasa nyali nzira mlimu. Zenwi, zefu mani hamasifera sesifa app ya imba, kize tatama. Elsin, ehangano, oshiherero, omaemuriro, Catholic, simane kakarunga, Africans, nizengu zengata. Mululi zeze kachenu, haiva mtavira kulisifera sa kereke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-2358-063, kapa mulumere imele kwa digital@omalighty.com. Muzive ni kufuma na imba kachenu, mkona kufuma na fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.